And we're back. It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar here with you. It's TSN Radio 690 in Montreal. It's Monday night, and we're happy to be here. What's going on, Mr. F?
Hi, Dave.
What's up?
How are you?
I'm very good, man.
Good.
I'm very good. Ready for a big show?
What? Yes.
All right. We got lots to tackle.
That's what I'm here for.
Good. Lots to tackle tonight. Four very big guests coming up on the show. Richard Deitch will be with us in about 5 minutes' time from Sports Illustrated, the media critic, who, did you happen to check out his piece yesterday?
Yes.
You'll have the chance during the commercial.
Okay.
Essentially, Richard goes through the Sunday morning football pregame shows and picks them to pieces for the way that they handled the murder-suicide that happened in Kansas City. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of those shows, I think, where we're going to be really straddling that line between sports and the real world. Sort of hard to escape what happened yesterday. And frankly, I found it very difficult to even think about football this weekend after what happened. Surprises me that so many fans went to the game in Kansas City. Surprises me that it's allowed to just keep going like that. There are big issues at hand with what happened this week, and we will discuss it. We're also going to be joined by Dave Zirin, who we'll touch on that as well. Dave wrote a piece for The Nation about how the game should not have been played in Kansas yesterday. And Deadspin liked it so much that they took it and put it on their website as well. So Dave had a huge audience today for that article. He was also on MSNBC and will join the Kaufman Show a little later. Eric Engels. Because there's so much hockey going on, we're going to talk hockey with Eric Engels. There was a rumor at one point today that progress had been made. A reporter out of Boston by the name of Steve Burton wrote an article saying that either tomorrow, Tuesday, or Wednesday, there will be an announcement that the season has been saved. I don't really buy it yet. We'll see. One guy saying it doesn't... what did Connor McKenna tweet, Jay?
He tweeted that... every day, a different someone with media credentials should tweet that they know that the lockout is over every single day. For that way, eventually somebody will be right.
Okay, so tonight is Steve Burton's turn.
Right, and he
got past the lucky hat.
I tweeted back at Connor. Isn't that already happening? I mean, everybody's an expert, right? I've seen it at least two or three times, maybe even a little bit more than that. That somebody has tweeted that. Oh, we're playing. And I say, wow. Unfollow, and then we go on.
Never to be heard from again.
Never to be heard from again.
Speaking of, Jay is back and active and excited and happy to be rocking the Twitter. His computer is fixed. And
yes.
You should all follow him at JPubRadio.
I'm going crazy on Twitter today. I'm like, you know, I've been jonesing for the Twitter. Don't really jones for Twitter. I don't tweet that much, but when I do, I get on a roll. So
I've been tweeting less and less of late. But, you know, it's not baseball season, so there isn't as much to tweet about.
There's always stuff to tweet about. Well, I just tweet about things that piss me off. So there's a lot of tweeting going on lately.
We'll also be joined in the latter part of the program by Mr. Adam Kovac, a Montreal freelance journalist who just published a story in the Hockey News. See, I'm trying, people. I'm trying to bring you some hockey.
We have quite a bit of hockey content.
This one's going to be a bit off the wall, though. This is the Federal Hockey League, the old FHL. Nothing, eh? Nothing. Like the tumbleweeds rolling.
The F what?
The FML.
The F-U-N-H-L?
No, the FHL.
The F-U-N-H-L?
No, it's some...
Because that's the league I'm going to start. It's called the F-U-N-H-L.
Oh, that sounds like a really fun league.
Yes.
It puts the F-U in fun, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, let's get back to this. We'll talk about a semi-pro hockey team based in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. This is what Kovac's article in... The Hockey News is about. They play at a baseball stadium. Now, you would think Williamsport, Pennsylvania, that they play at the baseball stadium. No, they play at the one across town.
Okay.
They're not getting 40,000, I guess, a game, so.
No?
No.
Oh.
You know, before you make it to the Little Leagues, you got to play in the Little Leagues. So, yeah, big show tonight. We're really excited. Eric Thomas is on the board, which I'm over the moon about. Looking forward to having you contribute during the show and not just sit there quietly when we do pre-tapes like we did in the last few weeks.
It's going to be a fun evening. The thing that most people don't get to see is when we do those pre-recordeds, I have to listen to the football game as well. Divided attention, but I'm all yours tonight, Dave, and ready.
Oh, good. Eric's going to pay attention to us tonight. That's good.
That's amazing.
Isn't that nice?
So excited. We're going to have a blast tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Be a little polite tonight for once. And acknowledge our presence.
Which I feel like is Eric. The right thing to do.
Yeah.
Jay, last week I got into trouble.
Oh, no.
I ragged on the Beatles too much.
Was somebody gave you a crap for ragging
just
on the Beatles?
Just a few, several
Why
people.
Why are you ragging on the Beatles for?
Remember, I was in such a pro Stones
What did the
state.
Beatles do to anybody except Jesus?
You might hear a little more of it tonight, or at least a few covers. This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be back. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you. Our next guest is the media critic and a reporter at Sports Illustrated. We had him on the show in July, and one of the best 20-minute interviews we've done, Jay. So let's welcome Richard Deitch back to the program. Hey, Richard, how are you?
I'm good. A lot of pressure with that intro, but thank you very much.
Well, and to be fair, we didn't bring you in on last time we brought you in on Tina Fey gangster rapping, so I don't know how we can live up to that one.
That is, I do remember that, because really it's not every day when you talk Tina Fey gangster rap.
Well, we try to separate ourselves from the rest, sir.
Indeed you did.
And you did as well with your Media Circus article this week. I mean, first of all, you tore CBS to shreds, and deservedly so.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I even sort of where to begin outside of just really using the word that I thought CBS just absolutely it provided a dereliction of duty. I mean, I realize it's sort of strong, but, you know, to me, and I think everybody understands that pregame shows sort of are what they are. They're basically there to sort of drive you to a game. They're not often serious. A lot of times there's pick segments and, you know, chuckle hut fraternity kind of oriented laughter. But, you know, on Saturday, there was a murder-suicide in the NFL. It is as major a story as one can get, you know, or maybe that's even a little sort of over the top, but it's certainly a major story, or as major a story as we've seen in the NFL this year. And it was just unbelievable to me that, for starters, CBS opened their broadcast with a live advertisement for a GPS company. But even when you get past that, they just fail to recognize the sobriety of the moment. And rather than immediately talking about this murder-suicide, this double shooting in Kansas City, went into 5 minutes of AFC playoff and NFC playoff talk. I mean, it was sort of beyond the tone-deaf kind of orientation of that show on Sunday was just beyond baffling. And in incredible contrast to all the other shows that had addressed this on Sunday. And so, you know, I think if you're a viewer, you're watching that, you're beyond perplexed by what these guys are doing. You're sort of seeing them start off the show with an absolute shill job. And, you know, I try to be very circumspect when I really go after somebody, but I was absolutely and thoroughly disgusted as a viewer and tried to reflect that in my piece.
Has CBS responded, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I talked to a number of people at CBS today, pretty much off the record stuff, I didn't do a follow-up story today. They did talked to USA Today on the record, And I'll paraphrase, their number two person there in CBS Sports said something to the effect of, you know, it's tricky to balance such coverage. On the whole, we thought we did a good job with the Belcher, with the, you know, Javon Belcher story. To me, that speaks for itself. They did an absolutely horrible job on the story. But, you know, I generally like a lot of what CBS does, and I think for them, and listen, all those guys saw how much they were hammered on Twitter. They saw all the columns like mine on Monday. So I think at this point it's very hard for them, unless they're going to just totally do a mea culpa, to say anything other than sort of the company line, hey, you know, we thought we covered it, we did this, we move on. I mean, the simple fact is there's really not much they can say. Their pretty horrible product on Sunday speaks for itself.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I still find it very difficult to reconcile as both a sports journalist and somebody who considers himself a journalist, too. I feel like this is a story that needed to be covered, and I don't understand that level of neglect, except for by the fact that you can say, okay, well, this is just about placing your bets, and this is all one big advertisement.
Well, listen, and I think, again, you know, you can suspend disbelief a little bit with all this stuff, and, like, you can accept product placement, and you can accept that, again, this is just basically one big entertainment venue, and you can even accept the nonsensicalness of the CBS show on this Sunday when they did their usual Victoria's Secret ad, where they bring a, you know, model in, and, you know, 100-year-old guys are ogling a 20-year-old girl. That's fine. You know, we can even suspend all that kind of nonsense. But the fact that they did not address the murder-suicide situation on a program when they were already going over the top with this kind of product placement nonsense, I think bothered me even more. Because if I step back as just someone who's thinking about editorial, I'm like, okay, we already got a show that's sort of bordering on ridiculous with all this product placement. So we absolutely owe it to the viewers at the top to treat this Kansas City Chiefs story with at least some kind of news judgment, some kind of journalistic chops, you know, and we're going to do like 6-7 minutes at the top. And then, all right, if we take the hit for this Victoria's Secret thing that we have to do because we have a relationship with CBS, fine. But if nothing else, at least we did our job for viewers at the top with an important, legitimate story. But CBS didn't even do that. They absolutely just dropped the ball. They were business as usual. I mean, at one point, if I remember correctly, Bill Cowher was joking about what ties he and Shannon Sharpe had for Baltimore-Pittsburgh week.
Wow.
That literally was at the same time on every other network. They were getting into a pretty serious and thoughtful discussion about what all this meant in Kansas City. So, again, you know, and I'm not trying to sort of repeat myself, but I really do try to pick my spots when I really sort of go all in on somebody. And I was just so, like, disgusted, disappointed, bothered by what CBS did. I just honestly thought that, you know, the tenor of the column that I wrote today deserved and was warranted to be written.
And once again, credit where credit is due. They sure take their licks, but Fox did the right job this weekend.
Which is kind of amazing because, again, you know, Fox Sports is usually the last place I go to when it comes to journalism. But in this case, I got to give them their props. From the start, they kind of understood what this story was. They opened with a live shot in Arrowhead Stadium. They didn't do their traditional over-the-top. I mean, nobody does over-the-top like Fox Sports and Fox NFL Sunday with their gadgets and, you know, sound effects that are, you know, louder than, you know, thunder in the sky. But in this case, they stepped back. They understood what this was. Kurt Menefee came in, sort of gave you a breakdown of what had happened in Kansas City. And they went to their information guy, Jay Glazer, who actually ended up reporting on a suicide in Cleveland, which I think turned out to be one of the groundskeepers, part of the Brown staff,
right,
committed suicide. So he gave you some news that was certainly in had a relationship to what happened in Kansas City. And then Menefee, Bradshaw, Terry Bradshaw, Howie Long, et cetera, again, gave you some pretty thoughtful commentary. And Bradshaw in particular, right off the bat, mentioning Cassandra Perkins and mentioning the real tragedy here is that a 3-month-old young girl no longer has parents. I mean, they got it. They understood what the story and the day was about, where CBS did not.
And then several hours later, Bob Costas weighed in at halftime of the Sunday night game.
Yeah, and that's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of layers to that. you know, on the one hand, I give Kostas a lot of credit for having the, I don't know what the word would be. Is temerity or the right word, or, so you know, the ballsiness the right word to address a incredibly politicized issue on a football show? You know, that itself is pretty ballsy. We generally never see that. And, you know, if nothing else, I'll admire the brazenness, politics aside. That said, I absolutely also understand the argument that a ton of Americans were making today that football, halftime of a football game is absolutely no place for some kind of editorial on the gun lobby. It's absolutely no place for what they perceive to be a liberal take on that subject. And then, you know, there are many who would even side with Kostas politically on the topic who were bothered by the fact that he injected that kind of discourse in a football game. So it's pretty fascinating, actually. The only thing that I hope is that Kostas, and again, I think one of the better broadcast journalists we have, one of the better broadcast sports journalists of our time, wasn't doing this because he's got a television show later in the week and wanted to get a little buzz ahead of it. I don't believe that's Bob Kostas. But, you know, let's put it this way. If it was almost anybody but sort of this, you know, my journalistic dander would get up and say, was this all one big play for promotion? But an absolutely fascinating thing. And, again, I think I saw Kostas today comment that he did not backtrack from the comments, did not backtrack from the fact that he decided to do this on Sunday Night Football.
Not the first time in recent memory, Richard, that we've seen Bob Kostas weigh in on something political. We saw him weighing in on the lack of a tribute to Israel during the Olympics as well.
Correct. I will say this. He is by far the only NBC Sports person who I think would have been allowed to do this based on his stature, based on his tenure, based on the fact that he has the bona fides of a journalist, you know, whether you've seen it with the Sandusky story, whether you've seen it with, you know, the guys hosted multiple Olympics. I mean, you know, there are television personalities and there are journalists who work in television. Bob Kostas is the latter. A guy like Chris Berman is the former. And when I thought this to myself, and I talked to an NBC sports PR guy today, and I said to him, I said, you know, there's absolutely nobody else at NBC Sports who would have been allowed to say on the air what Bob Kostas said. And the PR person agreed with me. The fact is, there isn't. I have no doubt that it was absolutely cleared by the head of NBC, you know, the chairman of NBC Sports. There's no way that the top management people would not know that such a politicized essay would be going on. But, you know, they greenlit that essay, and I think the only reason they greenlit it is because of the person who delivered that essay.
In conversation with Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated on the Kauffman Show with Jay Farrar and Eric Thomas.
Richard, obviously the gun control issue, it was brought up, but another part of this is the mental health and the mental illness issue. And I'm not saying that there was a correlation here with Jevon Belcher. We don't know all the facts. We never may. But what possibly does this say about the mental health of players and maybe taking some shots and being disgruntled or having anger management issues or a whole laundry list of things focused on the brain and mental health that the NFL is now having to deal with?
Well, I guess the one thing I would say there is that I think it's way too early to make that correlation in this case because, you know, we don't know anything at this point about Jevon Belcher's mental state prior to this incident. You know, SI did a lot of reporting this week. It'll be in our magazine coming out, you know, tomorrow and Wednesday, late tomorrow, Wednesday. And by all accounts, you know, whether he was at the University of Maine, by all accounts of his growing up in Long Island, wasn't a guy with a lot of anger management issues, at least outwardly. You know, our reporting did find out that he certainly was a gun enthusiast. He did own a lot of guns. He had some prior relationship issues with women, but I think those issues seemed to be more of arguing than anything else. I certainly don't feel comfortable in the Belcher situation to make that correlation. But listen, all of us who read about brain injury, concussions, et cetera, and I, you know, there was a Frontline report that just came out the other day, which listed, you know, another, I think, 20-something players who suffered from CTE. You know, we know that this stuff exists, but I would just caution trying to make that linkage right now with Belcher because we really don't know. I mean, the only thing we do know is that something obviously set him off. It seems to be that it was an argument with the mother of his child that set him off. And then after that, outside of the fact, obviously, that we know he murdered the mother of his child and then ultimately killed himself, you know, we don't know much more about the correlation. So I would just only say that it's probably a little too early to make the kind of correlation, at least in the Belcher case. A
couple of minutes left with Richard Deitch from SI. Richard, sort of lost in the shuffle with all this today is that Sports Illustrated named LeBron James the Sportsman of the Year.
LeBron James, Sportsman of the Year, and for once, it doesn't seem like we're getting yelled at for our pick. No,
it seems like such a safe pick to me.
And that's fair, and I think that's ultimately fair. But I would say this: you know, someone who's worked with the Sportsman essays online for the last 6 or 7 years, so I've read them all, seen them all, edited a lot of them, written a couple myself. You know, this was a year where, outside of LeBron James, I'll just name a couple people who I think are legit candidates: Serena Williams, Andy Murray, Usain Bolt, Gabby Douglas, Michael Phelps. You know, if you want to take it internationally, someone like Lionel Messi.
Mm-hmm. That'll never happen, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
Mo Farah, Jessica Ennis. But here's the thing, you know, and I'm one who loves outside the box picks. But I think if you take all of the people I just named and you compare them to LeBron James, there's a great argument that LeBron absolutely deserves Sportsman over all of them. You could probably make a good argument for the other people I mentioned too, but we're talking about a guy who won the NBA Finals this year. He won a gold medal in the Olympics, and he has a really good redemption story after and again, I'm not saying the guy's the most beloved player in the league. He never will be. But I think you definitely thought of him far differently in 2012 than you obviously did in 2011. So I think he even has sort of the context there. And he has done a lot in the community, at least in Miami and in Akron. So he has, you know, sort of that component as well. I don't disagree with you. It's a safe pick. But I think actually this year, I think it's a good pick. And there have been years, especially the year that we picked Dwayne Wade over Roger Federer, that I was absolutely not happy with our choice. But I think this year, I think we got it. I mean, I don't know if the word is right, because they're really, you know, it's all sort of subjective.
Right.
But I think we made a pretty good call on the merits this year.
How much does something like integrity factor into it?
I think it factors in. You know, ultimately, it's the final decision is made by the managing editor of the magazine. And ultimately, somebody has to have a final say, and that's the person who has the say. But I can tell you, just, you know, it's certainly discussed within a group of people. People make the cases, I think, for certain candidates. And sportsmanship, integrity, and things like that are always at play. And again, that this is where it's interesting with LeBron. You know, how much do you hold it against him for his move from Cleveland to Miami?
Right.
How much do you hold against him, kind of, you know, the nonsense kind of stuff that he, Wade, and Bosh did when LeBron and Bosh first arrived? And those are all good questions. The one thing I will say about LeBron is, you know, I really think, and I'm someone who was rooted absolutely against him in 2011 for that ridiculous, nonsensical decision that he did on ESPN. But I do think he became a much more interesting and likable figure after losing to Dallas and making a conscious decision that he was not going to play basically the villain of the league anymore. And I think you saw far more joy with LeBron James on the court this year than you had seen in previous years.
It was just nice to see a debate about several athletes that didn't involve the names Trout and Cabrera.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And any debate that doesn't involve the names Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless, I'm usually I'm all for.
Well, we try to avoid those as much as we can on Montreal Sports Radio. We know where our bread is buttered.
Yet another reason why Canada is a great country.
Oh, the bagels are in the mail, Richard. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated. He is the media critic, reporter, and writer, and we're all big fans. That was fantastic.
Right.
That was, even without the Tina Fey gangster rap, that he nailed it.
Not to put this as a defense, but...
Of what?
Didn't get a chance to weigh in, but how much can you expect from a bunch of football players and coaches sitting around a table? I mean, these guys are not really journalists, are they? They're not really, I don't think they're equipped to start talking about a situation like this. Because really, when you think about it, these guys are kind of the Vince McMahon of the NFL. They're there basically to promote the product, make it look good. I mean, they're not.
No, Jay, those are the people that are on camera. There's a whole staff of producers and
stuff. Oh, I know that, but they're not journalists, are they?
They had 24 hours. Jay. They had 24 hours. That's more than
to
enough
to prep
time,
something. Yes,
more than enough time to.
I'm not
to
defending them.
Come to your common sense and realize what is appropriate. And
I'm
what
not
isn't.
Defending them, but how much would we expect from these guys? I mean, really, you know. And I was actually shocked. I was taken aback by what Terry Bradshaw said because I was like, "Good on you, man." I'm surprised because I really was not expecting much out of these guys. I was expecting all this crap with the Victoria's Secret and commenting on each other's ties and laughing at each other and making stupid jokes. I expect it. That's the point that it's gotten to. These guys are not, they're not actually covering football. They're not covering it in a way, they're not looking at it from an unbiased perspective. Like he said, like Richard said, this is a fraternity.
Sure.
These guys are coming in from the inside. So, I mean, we couldn't expect much from them in the first place, could we?
I guess not, but I strive for something better. And I think that our society would benefit from sports journalism treating itself like journalism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we would be more self-aware of what we watch and what we care about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how I feel about that.
Yeah. Well, nobody's ever going to be happy with what happened anyway. And it was in the.
And I hope that if it was somebody, I hope that if it was something closer to home, that the people that I care about would have handled it a little better.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, and I hope I never have to find out.
No, well, that's definitely something we don't want to find out about.
Let's go to the phones. 514-790-1690. If you're out of town, 1-866-896-2546. Let's go to Andrew. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, guys. How are we going?
Hey, how are you, Chef?
Great, but what a terrible subject, unfortunately, I have to talk about. But, I mean, the word tragically or tragic, I don't know how many times I heard it this weekend, but I don't think it was ever properly ever used in a sentence this weekend. The only way that an event that happened like this in the NFL could be called tragic would be if the story had a completely different ending or a completely different beginning. And just for an example, like if we were to hear something that NFL player loses wife in tragic car accident, mother of his three-month-old child cannot bear it, goes to stadium and does what he eventually does, that would be something that was tragic. But the events that we have so far, and I'm not about to judge anything because we don't know enough of what's going on so far. It's just ridiculous to have that word tragic used as frequently as it was. And I, as well, with Fox, with Terry Bradshaw, I almost fell off my chair listening to him, and they got it perfect. They got it right. I think they got it as human beings, as men, as proud men, of men who don't do things like this, that don't accept that things like this could ever be possibly done. It's just... it's ridiculous.
Well, that's my question. What would have happened had Belcher lived? Had he not committed suicide? What would have been the reaction then on the air from everybody? It would have been nothing but condemnation. Exactly. It would have been nothing but that. But because the guy killed himself and probably did us all a favor, because I don't care, he's a murderer. He's a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
He murdered a human being and left a child motherless. And you know what? Well, too bad for you. Well, nobody's going to see it that way. Instead, they put his face up on the screen, and they put the years that he lived. Like we should give a crap.
Chiefs.
He's a murderer.
Chiefs.
He did us a favor.
The running back on the Kansas City Chiefs, Jamal Charles.
Yeah.
His first cousin was Cassandra Perkins. So I don't know how he feels in the clubhouse seeing...
you must feel...
you know, the candles and the tribute by Belcher's locker.
It's amazing.
When this guy who killed himself... and. I mean, we can get into a conversation about the manner in which he did it, but again, I don't think it's worth our time right now. The tragedy is Cassandra Perkins. The tragedy is not Javon Belcher. The tragedy is the way that we value people like Javon Belcher in our society.
And that is the exact point that I was trying to get across, that because it was an individual who was in a sport that we all love, and it was on a sacred day, which is they played on a Sunday, and all of this went down on a Saturday. Do we play the game? Do we don't play the game? There was just so much that was completely lost in this whole story, and I hope that eventually it'll come to the forefront.
Thanks for the call, Chef.
Thanks.
Catch you soon. Let's keep this going. Let's go to Roy. Good evening, Roy.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey,
you doing?
Roy. How are you, man? Long time no speak.
How you doing? I know. I just got a phone. I get myself settled a bit.
Oh, good stuff, man. Happy to know you're still listening to the program.
I'm always listening to the program.
Good stuff.
And I'm sitting here going like this, why can't I call him? What can I call? How you been?
Very good. Very good. We're trying to talk about some important stuff tonight. And,
I know. You know what? This is why I'm calling more than anything else. I don't like calling. I listen. But You guys are the first guys I've heard, thank God, that has put I've put this in
perspective
way. Yeah, thanks. Because this guy's not, you know, I feel so bad for the woman, the young lady that died. I mean, and everybody's talking about this guy, like you said, tragic. It's not, what's tragic is this young lady is gone. The kid's got no mother. And all everybody's talking about is the football thing and how the team pulled through and everything. I mean, how imagine being the grandmother and listening to this, everybody's praising this football player, and he just shot his daughter. I mean, and actually got to take care of her granddaughter. I mean.
Well, Roy, I'll tell you what, man. They got to sell ads, right?
They got to sell ads.
They got to sell ads.
You know what? I'm not really.
Garmin GPS needs to. There's a contractual obligation there.
It's not only that. I'm not really mad that they played, to tell you the truth. I'm not. I don't really care that the Chiefs actually played on Sunday. You know why? Because, I mean, one of their people on their team, somebody in the organization, did a really, really bad thing. He did a really, really bad thing. He paid for it. It's over. I think, you know what? The show goes on. Had they stopped the game, it probably would have felt more of a kind of a tribute to Belcher than it would have. You know, I understand that a woman is dead and that, you know.
But the players
if he
should
was,
have been.
If he was in jail, would this still have the same reaction? Because nobody has any kind of sympathy for a guy who goes out and kills his wife and then gets caught for it.
I think, Jay, the idea, at least in my mind, is that the world should stop and take a breath and think about things for a second. And,
right.
And more than the fact that the game was played, it was that before the body was taken to the morgue, the decision was made that the game was going to be played. And that rubs me the wrong way.
Well, perhaps it was obviously it's all about, I mean, advertising and money and so on and so forth. But I don't know. Sometimes you say, well, you know what? Screw you. We're going to go on and play anyway. You know, maybe you could see it that way sometimes. Say, you know, kind of a thing where you say, well, you doing something stupid like that and ending the life of a human being and then committing suicide. Well, the world shouldn't stop for you. Maybe, you know, that's how I see it.
One day, Jay, we'll get to talk about something light and airy on the show again, I
yeah,
promise.
One of these days.
It'll happen. In the meantime, we will take a break and come back with Dave Zirin, our favorite guest.
We go pitchy ball down at the Union Hall.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you. We're going to bring in our favorite guest. We're lucky, Jay. We're getting all kinds of Dave Zirin. I don't know if he's going to be able to set up all the dirty jokes he promised for us, though, this time.
I'll take as much Dave Zirin as I can.
We've got a lot of heavy stuff to get to with him, but we will start from the start. Dave Zirin is the sports editor of The Nation magazine. You could read him on Deadspin today, where they borrowed his article from The Nation called How Can They Play? Murder, Suicide, and the National Football League. You know, Jay, honestly, like 72 hours ago, I thought we were going to bring Dave on to talk about pot in the NFL, but let's go on to something serious instead. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
Yeah, it would have been a lot more fun to talk about Mile High Stadium.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
Colorado, that would have been more fun.
We will get there. I know I saw something today on Twitter that they just started pot radio in Denver, so, you know, there's always that. But in the meantime, NFL really dropped the ball on this one, didn't they?
Big time. I'm still stunned that the NFL chose to go ahead and play the game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Carolina Panthers. But I'm even more stunned by the timeline, if you want to go through it. I mean, think about it for a second. 8 a.m., Javon Belcher kills Cassandra Perkins. By 8:10, he's at the facility with a gun to his head, takes his own life in front of his coach, Romeo Crennel, defensive coordinator, Gibbs, and team president Scott Pioli. By 10 a.m., the Carolina Panthers had been told by the NFL that they should still prepare to go to Kansas City for the game. And by 2 p.m., the word is out very hastily that, oh, no, 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 the Kansas City Chiefs captains and Coach Crennel, they want to go ahead and play the game. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but even if it is true, that was driven by the captains, it was driven by the team, I don't think that's their decision to make. Because it's not just a question about the Chiefs, it's the question about the message that the NFL is choosing to send. And the message that it sent was, we are going to whitewash what took place, and we are not going to care about the mental state of the people who we are putting onto the field for what is, of course, a very violent game. You know, I've interviewed a lot of NFL players, and they always say that the field is most dangerous when they're distracted. Now, how could the players have been anything but distracted on that field? And, of course, we don't know about all the injuries. You don't really know about that until a couple of days later. But, you know, then there are injuries in every NFL game. But it's just, to me, it was a horrible statement ranking up there with when the NFL chose to play the Sunday after John Kennedy's assassination.
And yet that was at a time when the NFL didn't mean what it means in America today. And
exactly.
I think that when you see, I mean, the visceral reaction, first of all, on Twitter is one thing. And the shock from really across the board. I didn't see the game. The game wasn't broadcast locally here. So I don't know how the fans reacted in the stands, but that's not a game that I would have wanted to go to.
And interestingly, I saw footage on the local news from Kansas City that there were fans tailgating about to go into the stadium saying, yeah, they shouldn't be playing this game today.
Hmm.
I mean, and so I don't blame the fans or hold them culpable at all. I don't hold the players culpable even for doing things like saying things like we did this for our fallen teammate and setting up that little shrine for him in the locker when he's someone who just killed his 22-year-old girlfriend, the mother of his 3-month-old child, because I think everybody can be seen as being in, to some degree, in a state of shock
mm-hmm.
and having to process an insane amount of information. I do blame the NFL because they're the controlling authority here. I mean, imagine for a second if, say, a pilot of a plane witnessed a horrific murder and then 24 hours later said, no, 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 I can fly this plane. I'm going to do it. I think someone would step in and say, I'm sorry, but you cannot do that because your head is not in it, whether you say it is or not. And you actually need to talk to somebody, a mental health professional. I mean, the whole pantomime of saying that there are going to be grief counselors on the sideline during the game yesterday in case any players needed grief counseling. I mean, it was all a big joke. It was a sham. It was the NFL at its absolute worst. And I'm not shocked. I think you'd have to be crazy to be shocked that the NFL would put profits before people. But I am very disappointed.
It's, well, like you said, I mean, first of all, an incredibly contrived move by the National Football League. But again, there's nothing surprising here. There's nothing surprising here. The NFL does not care about its players. It makes the other three big professional sports, by comparison, seem like they really care about their players. This is a league where you blow your knee out the day after you sign the contract isn't good anymore.
Right.
I don't find it surprising. What I find surprising is that if we don't see a reaction from the fan base on this and that it doesn't grow. And it's another great example, I think, of how the NFL doesn't care. It's a corporation. It doesn't care about its fans. It doesn't care about its players.
Well, I mean, will there be any sort of backlash? I mean, I think that Fox and CBS both did their jobs yesterday in making sure that there was no real discussion or contextualization or challenge to the NFL about what took place. The words Cassandra Perkins and even Javon Belcher were not mentioned on Fox or on CBS. And Bob Costas, people are talking about this today. I definitely support his right to speak about handgun control during the halftime show. But I think even that serves as a distraction for what the real issue is. I mean, this is not a handgun control issue, because honestly, if you're an NFL player and you've got money, you're going to get a gun, whether it's legal or not.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you want a gun in your house and you're a 25-year-old multimillionaire, you're going to get a gun in your house. But in this particular case, like, I think the real issue is the fact that Tervon Belcher is now the fourth suicide. The real issue is Cassandra Perkins. The real issue is a sport that could be running out of rope when it comes to how people are perceiving its violence.
I'll tell you, Dave, if the NFLPA was run by somebody with the integrity of Marvin Miller, then I don't think we ever would have seen teams on the field yesterday.
Oh, I make no bones about the fact that I'm a fan of Demora Smith and the job he's done with the NFLPA and the job he's done particularly like trying to reach out to other unions, which is pretty unprecedented in the National Football League. I do like a lot of what Demora Smith is doing. I think the union, you mentioned before about the non-guaranteed contracts. The union structurally is weak in terms of its ability to do things like, for example, earlier this year, pull players off the field when you had the scab refs. And I don't really know what it could have done in terms of making any kind of demands that the Chiefs not play, particularly if the Chiefs players themselves weren't having buy-in. But this was a moment for the Chiefs themselves to really seize their own destiny by the you-know-what and say, we're not going to go out on the field today. And it's a sad thing because I don't doubt the sincerity of players who say, yeah, for those 3 hours it was easier. Of course it was easier. You're football players. Football is a huge part of your life. You were able to go on the field, get a win for 3 hours. But when I read things like the Associated Press talk about the healing has begun, and it's like, it's Sunday. This happened yesterday, Saturday. We don't even know the facts of what took place. And the healing's begun. I mean, that's when you just want to vomit.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And it's the Ray Carruth, the parentless child story all over again. And I wish we had something happier to talk about. I really do.
But, I'm glad we're talking about it, though. I really am. Because I think it's one of those things where it's like the sports world is part of the real world and the real world is part of the sports world. And the two are intimately connected, and I think we ignore either one at our peril. I think if we say sports don't matter, I think we're missing out on how a lot of people's ideas are influenced on this continent and in this world. And I think if we say, it's all about sports, 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 and before you know it, someone like Cassandra Perkins is just a detail in a story. And not a 22-year-old who's dead. And there's not a little girl named Zoe Belcher who's going to grow up without parents.
Dave, nobody puts it better than you. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Follow him on Twitter at Edge of Sports. And to a happier conversation next week.
Oh, anytime, guys.
Thanks so much.
You will.
There he goes, Dave Zirin. Our thanks to Dave Zirin. As always, the dude is, we're very lucky to have that man join our show on a more and more and more frequent basis. Yes, Mr. Ferrar, you look like you have something you want to say.
No, it's Richard Deitch and Dave Zirin and where's Bob Costas? That's all we're missing.
You know what? It's
the kind of show we've had.
He didn't answer my calls.
You know, Bob Costas also by the way, I was thinking about this, during the World Series.
Yeah.
Mentioned that some of the players are juiced.
I don't remember that.
I forget who he was broadcasting with, but you could almost hear him think, shut up. What? I can't believe you're saying that. And see, that's the difference.
Well, that wouldn't have been this year.
I'm talking late 90s, early 2000s. Okay.
From the NBC days.
Yeah.
When they used to host the World Series.
That's right. And he said something. They were talking about the liveliness of the ball, and that's why there's so many home runs being hit. He's like, well, I think the ball is juiced, but I think some of the players are juiced too. And there's just this dead silence in the booth, which was amazing. See, that's the difference between a broadcaster and a guy who's part of a fraternity and a real journalist.
Yeah, but
he'll just say what he feels.
And Richard said that Costas is the only person at NBC who's
that can get away with that. Yeah.
And it's true because Chris Collinsworth can't say it.
No.
And if Al Michaels says it, then you're going to think it has something to do with the over-under of the Sunday night game.
Yeah.
And Costas is the guy. It falls on his shoulders, and it's good to know that he's a man of integrity. Yeah, I mean, say what you want about him and whether you like him or not, or whether you, you know, I personally have always been a fan. And he wrote a book, oh God, maybe almost 15 years ago. I think it was called Fair Ball.
Right.
And it was how to fix baseball. It was baseball is broken. These are the steps you take to fix it. I didn't agree with everyone, but man, I thought it was important that somebody wrote it.
It's amazing, too, because Costas was the play-by-play. He wasn't even the color. He was the play-by-play guy. And usually when a play-by-play guy lets his opinion go a little bit, it comes off as totally bad. It never looks good on the guy because everybody wants to like it. If Al Michaels started, you know, going off on some political rant, it would never, ever look good. People would react badly to it. But for some reason, Bob Costas gets away with it, and I'm glad he does.
Cosell got away with it.
Cosell got away with it, too, but Cosell was more of kind of a beat guy. You know, he'd be down there next to the ring. He knew all the guys. You know, he was kind of, he was both a play-by-play and a color guy at the same time. Whereas, you know, Al Michaels or, you know, somebody like that is just, it's just, or Buck, you know, guys like that, they're just straight arrow guys who you never want to hear give any kind of opinion about anything because it's kind of, these guys are kind of a comfort that you go to, you know?
You see, for me, that's
and you don't want them getting snarky.
Vin Scully, for me, would be the epitome of that.
Right.
And occasionally you will hear Vin Scully make a comment about something that doesn't have to do with baseball, but then he'll tie it into the time that Jackie Robinson flied out at Ebbets Field in 1953.
Yeah, the more you can, the further away in history that it happened, the more distance you can put yourself between that and any kind of opinion, you know?
Very interesting conversation tonight.
Yeah.
It's, again, you know, it would be nice to come at it with something a little happier, but I could not give two damns about the NFL when there's a story like this to be discussed. Because this is bigger than the NFL, and frankly, this is the stuff that defines the National Football League.
It's bigger than the NFL, but if this happens to anybody else, anywhere else in North America, we probably wouldn't have heard about it, unless it happened here in Montreal.
You mean random murder-suicide?
Yes.
Of course.
You'd hear about it.
Happens every day.
Yeah. You'd hear about it, and everybody would say, what a jerk this guy is.
Oh, no,
what an ass.
Look, let's be clear about this. We are incredibly fortunate to live in a city where things like that don't happen every day.
No. Maybe about 40 times a year.
Yeah, and once in a generation, you have something like the Polytechnique Massacre.
Right.
And today is December the 4th, and I believe, yeah, December the 6th is the anniversary of the Polytechnique. And that's, I don't know about you, Jay, but that's one of my youngest memories.
I remember, it's not young for me. I was 13 at the time.
Okay.
So I remember it very, very distinctly. Yeah.
But on a weekend where violence against women should have been a bigger story than it was, and not just the suicide of an NFL player, it brought me back to the Polytechnique Massacre. Which, I mean, again, you can look at that as violence towards women or violence towards students or just violence, period.
Which is an interesting scenario. Think of it this way. Whenever there's a massacre, a gun massacre of some kind, whether it's Columbine or the Polytechnique, the number of dead are always numbered by the victims, never by the guy who shoots himself in the end.
You mean like 14 people were killed? Yeah, you know what? And it's interesting. Yeah, okay. 14 women were killed plus the gunman.
They'll never give the statistic to the gunman himself.
Right.
They'll say plus the gunman himself or what have you.
Okay, but Jay, that's why this weekend was so weird.
Which is why it was so weird.
Jovan Belcher got so much due, unnecessary due.
Two victims instead of one.
Right.
I'm sorry, but Belcher is not a victim.
No.
He's not a victim.
No, he made this mess.
Yeah. All he did was save the Americans a lot of money in the justice system. That's all he did.
Yeah.
And
left too many unanswered questions.
Left too many unanswered questions and basically ruined a child's life. So, you know what? There is only one victim. Stop saying that two people died because only one did.
That's part of where sports is now.
Yep.
We idolize these guys and we put them on a pedestal.
Yep.
And it's almost as though they can do no wrong. And when they do, we hope that it's not the worst of things. And I know that this is in no way a comparison whatsoever. I'll just say that as a disclaimer. But I can remember thinking, you know, I hope this was of course 4 or 5 years ago, and I was a little more naive and a little bit younger. But I hope that Michael Vick is found innocent and that this doesn't go on and carry on. And how could he do this when we don't know what these guys' personal lives are like? We don't know what happens when they go home and the door gets closed.
No, but you're from Atlanta and you probably grew up idolizing Michael Vick and. Yeah, it's the say it ain't so Joe, right?
That's exactly
it's say it ain't so, and
we have to accept what it is.
We have been doing it since long before Joe Jackson with the made-up story that we discussed with Dave McGimsey of the kid on the courthouse steps. Say it ain't so, Joe. We've been doing that forever.
Yeah.
We love our heroes. We used the word hagiography on the show last week.
Yeah.
And I can't believe we're bringing it up again. And frankly, this all came to light, at least for us, on when we started discussing Joe Paterno. And it, you can kind of, that was a year ago. We've been discussing Joe Paterno, Saint Joe Paterno, when he was still alive. And the idea that people were still trying to propagate this myth of what a good man he was. Well, he turned a blind eye. And Jevon Belcher, I don't know if he was a good man or not.
He didn't turn a blind eye, Paterno. He systematically refused to say anything about an awful, terrible crime. Yeah. A terrible crime. Yeah. So he didn't turn a blind eye. He's a criminal himself, as far as I'm concerned. You know, that's aiding and abetting, in my case, you know.
Well, he will not get his day in court.
No, he won't.
And neither will Jevon Belcher. And I, you know what? I got to be honest with you. Not a name I knew. Not a name I had ever heard of. The Kansas City Chiefs are not high on my radar list. A couple of guys on that team I know because people tweet about what disappointments they are for their fantasy football teams.
I'm a Raiders fan, so I kind of know that division a little bit. But I knew of him, but
You know that CBS actually put out an alert, a fantasy alert, suggesting that you don't pick him up for your fantasy league?
Did see that.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I did see that. How classless, how stupid could you be
that it's probably not somebody there. Like, it's probably a computer algorithm that when something pops up on an injured reserve list, it says, and they just fill in the blanks, because otherwise
somebody
that's
should
a
be
terrible
paying
job.
Attention, though, yeah.
But yeah, somebody should be paying attention.
Yeah.
It's
as
like
a sick
the,
joke, it's kind of funny.
What was that thing on Twitter? There was a shooting or somebody was shot, I think. And then there was this fashion. It was the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. And there was some company, I think, out of England.
With Kim Kardashian's new line, I think.
Thank you.
Or something along those lines.
Something ridiculous like that. Yeah. And they had obviously pre-written and set up their tweets so that they would be released throughout the day.
Named Aurora. And that was the name of the line.
And it was exactly. And it was how excited are we for. And it was just, it was awful. It was awful. It was a lesson in. We did our lesson in how to tweet last week.
We did.
And we still don't have our sarcasm button.
No, we don't. It's the maybe they'll. I don't know. There'll be some sort of hash mark that they can do where you just like write sarcasm, but then it kind of ruins the sarcasm, doesn't it?
The three of us in the studio right now are on Twitter. Feel free to communicate with us through that. Jay is at JPub Radio. Eric is at ATL 2, the number 2, MTL. Get it? Atlanta to Montreal?
We get it.
Okay. And I'm at the Kaufman Show. And that's where we're at. all right. Let's play this song right now. This was written by The Hip and never released. It's called Montreal. It's about the Polytechnique murder massacre. And we'll be back after the break, and we're going to change things up and talk a little bit of hockey. Because that's always fun, right, everybody? Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Eric Thomas in with us tonight as well. And we're going to bring in Eric Engels, one of my favorite hockey writers. He tweets about the Habs, which means he's kind of a boring Twitter follow right now, I have to say. At Eric Engels. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
You wouldn't be lying. I've been a very boring Twitter follower since the hockey season was supposed to start.
It's tough right now, isn't it?
It's pretty brutal. I'm tweeting about things like The Voice and The X Factor and losing followers.
Oh, jeez. It is bad.
It's bad.
Well, you could, first of all, you could pick some better shows to tweet about. Maybe that'll help.
Well, I was tweeting about my other shows too. Boardwalk Empire, Dexter, Sons of Anarchy.
That's a little better. Yeah.
Yeah. I've become a TV file with no hockey. So.
Well, brutal. I don't know if there's anything terribly wrong with that as a replacement. It's kind of tough to, you know, I guess do the daily beat for television. That market's kind of already covered. But
I'm getting desperate. Might have to go back to the gym soon.
I saw on your Twitter feed you retweeted Joe Haggerty today, and there seemed to be a glimmer of hope, which really just turned out to be bunk like everything else. There really isn't going to be hockey anytime soon, is there?
Well, a glimmer of hope. I mean, I kind of retweeted it because it was a laughable suggestion that the NHL and NHLPA were conspiring to break the news to everybody come Tuesday or Wednesday that they've solved it and the deal is done. I mean, it's almost a ridiculous notion. I mean, if they had a deal in place or the makings of a deal, or they were that close behind closed doors and just keeping it from everybody to have some sort of hooray moment, I mean, that would just be absurd after this much time wasted and money wasted. One thing, you know, as we get into the fact that this lockout continues to drag on and will likely continue to drag on past that meeting between players and owners only and then the Board of Governors meeting on Wednesday, is I would love to see numbers on what the legal fees have been for the lockout and they're paying lawyers for all the discussion that's going on. That would be a really interesting figure to check out. Hopefully James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail go into something like that sometime soon.
You see, I wonder if that's actually the case, or if these guys just have lawyers on retainer for X amount a month, whether they're using them or not.
One way or the other, someone's going to have to pay for it, and I think they better bring it up in the bargaining, you know, because I don't know if the players are going to want to absorb that cost.
We know who's paying for it, Eric. We're paying for it.
Yeah, we are.
The fans will pay for it when they finally get billed for their tickets.
Yeah, if we're going to get serious, I mean, we're paying for it with much more than our money at this point. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. As someone who's involved in the hockey world in so many different facets, I speak to people all over the place, both in Canada and the United States. And as I see the absolute apathy setting in a place like Montreal, where we have no other sports going on whatsoever, there's no MLS, there's no Alouettes, and we all know how both those things play second fiddle to the National Hockey League when it's going on. But to know that the apathy has really set in fully across the board in Montreal is to know that in hockey hotbeds in the United States like Detroit, Minnesota, New Jersey, Buffalo, places where the game thrives and is popular, you can only imagine what that's doing to hockey business and just to the general atmosphere around hockey. They're killing it right now, and that can't be taken for granted. It's a very serious thing.
In conversation with hockey writer and reporter Eric Engels, follow him on Twitter at Eric Engels. Eric, you know that the people in Montreal will come back. You know that the people even the U.S. hockey hotbeds, they will eventually come back. It's the smaller markets that seem to be really doomed coming out of this, don't you think?
I think the smaller markets, you know, anytime you have a labor stoppage, obviously you're going to lose people in the smaller markets and the fringe fans. But I actually want to counter what you just said, because I think in some of the bigger markets, in places like Detroit and places like New Jersey, you know, in places like Minnesota, they're not guaranteed to come back. I know that when baseball went on strike in 1994, I was a huge Expos fan. And I never came back because it was just the very thought of it. And I was young at the time and a child, but I understood what was going on, and it was sickening to me. Now it's a completely different ball of wax, but it's just to say that once you start to feel as though the whole process and what they're actually fighting over is so absurd that you can't really relate to it in any kind of way, that's where you're in real danger of losing somebody that's a diehard fan. And I think the NHL, with what's gone on, you may be right. They may get some of those diehard fans back, but some of them may never come back. And some of them, it will take a very long time for them to come back. And I know it took Major League Baseball a very long time to rebound after what happened to them throughout the 90s. So there's things here that have been fully taken for granted. And even worse, in the arrogance of this entire situation, is the NHL was $600 million away from overtaking the NBA in total revenue. And at the current growth rate that Gary Bettman proposed at the beginning of the lockout, that you would continue to grow at 5%, and that's what those proposals were based on, you know, it wouldn't be long before the NHL overtook the NBA. And that could have been Gary Bettman's legacy, as opposed to the guy who stopped hockey, you know, four times. It's the most obscene thing possibly ever in sports. And if things aren't looking sunnier by the end of the week with those two meetings taking place, we start going down the road of decertification. I know that was used in the other labor negotiations, the NBA and the NFL, and it ultimately led to a quick deal happening thereafter. I think in this particular case, this could really set things back, not just for this season, but for past this season. So I hope, you know, that early report, which was debunked very quickly by Bill Daly of the NHL, saying there's absolutely not even a speckle of truth to it, potentially is partially true, and that the sides are closer than we all believe they are.
You know, it's interesting, Eric. With baseball, it took a steroid scandal and a bunch of home runs to get fans back. And after the last lockout in the NHL, I personally think that it was Crosby and Ovechkin that brought people back with a real fervor and excitement. Now, what's the NHL what's going to be their selling point?
That is the pertinent question, Dave. And you know what? It's the one I've been asking since we ran out of original thoughts to talk about on this lockout. And when it comes down to it, when we went to 2004 and what we came back to, you're right, it was Crosby and Ovechkin, but it was also Malkin, and it was Mario Lemieux coming back to hockey, and it was shootouts, and it was goals, and it was more penalties and more power plays and just the general excitement of the hockey. And now we're coming back to, is Sidney Crosby going to make it through his next headshot? I mean, that to me does not exactly bring people out of their seats, and I'm not sure what they're going on, because I think there are a few changes that need to happen in hockey. I think we've seen some of the obstruction creep back in slowly over time. I think some of it was to protect players due to some of the injuries and the natural evolution of speed of the game. But something's got to give, because if they think that they're coming back with the same kind of scenario where there's all these new exciting faces, I mean, sure, you have Nathan MacKinnon, who's ripping it up right now in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and everybody's excited about the next number one pick, and everyone's excited to see what Neil Yakupov will do in the National Hockey League. But when it comes down to it, those guys don't hold a candle to Crosby or even Ovechkin, for that matter. So it's going to take a lot of time to rebuild this, and it really highlights the arrogance of the National Hockey League, that because everybody came back in 2004, they'll come back in 2013. And honestly, they absolutely, unequivocally cannot afford to lose this entire season.
Eric, I have an idea that I think the casual fan will come back in the small market, because I don't think they really care either way. They'll say, oh yeah, they had a strike last year, and they don't really know the details of it. I think it's in the big market cities like Montreal and Toronto where you're really going to see a lot of backlash, because for me personally, on a personal level, the game is tainted for me. It leaves, I picture myself watching hockey right now with a very bad taste in my mouth. And I was thinking, you know, maybe instead of just having a players union, maybe they should include some of the, you know, concession stand guys and some of the truck drivers, include them all in the union.
Oh, you're dreaming.
And see what happens next time they have a lockout. How crap will go down the next time it comes around.
The piano tuners, Local 279?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Why not? See what include everybody in the union and see what happens next time.
Yeah. I mean, the labor negotiation could turn into a sport itself. And I think that's what we've seen this time around. But you know what, Jay, to get to the first point that you're making there, I think there's some real validity to it. I mean, you're talking about the emotional effect of this lockout, and really it has brought a great degree of anger and anger to the people that really are the keepsake of the game in Toronto and Montreal and New York and Boston and Detroit and those hockey hotbeds. If those people are angry, you know, they love hockey enough to make it known that they're angry and make it known when it comes back. that they're too angry to buy into it. And that to me, is more about people making a statement than it is a statement about their love of the game. I just think this is such a dark cloud that has been put over this. And when it comes down to it, you know, we can get past anger and emotion because, after all, this really is just business. And to be ignorant about the fact that when dollars are on the table, it's always about how many of them you can put in your pocket. It's tough. It's a tough kind of juxtaposition. You want to be in touch with that emotional side because that's what being a fan of the game is all about. But when you understand the business dynamics and any business for that matter, this just happens to be a business that entertains us and one that we miss. You know that, you know, what they're fighting for, whether it's justifiable or not in our eyes, is certainly justifiable in the eyes of those at the table. So I don't know how they feel, but I know that emotion isn't overtaking them, but it should certainly overtake the people in Montreal and Toronto and the hotbed markets where they actually care about hockey and not just the National Hockey League.
Hope you're watching Homeland, Eric.
Unbelievable show. Got me on the edge of my seat. I love it.
Same here. Same here. I look forward to your live tweets next Sunday night of the finale.
It should be good. And for me, Dave, nothing holds a candle to Boardwalk Empire. And Dexter was my favorite show forever. But I feel like I'm sitting down for an hour-long movie every time I watch Boardwalk Empire. The entire package that you get there with the acting and the – I think they should hire me to market their show, actually. I'm a big fan. And
I don't think they need your help right now, Eric.
I've gotten a chance to watch a lot of TV this year. It's pretty awful. I mean, I would much rather be at the Bell Center doing what I love to do, but I won't lie. I'm definitely into all these shows. I can't wait for Breaking Bad to get back. And yeah, that's where I'm at right now. That's my lockout story.
We're going to bring you in, and I guess in 6 months, and we'll do an Emmy pool with you.
All right, I'm down.
Hopefully there'll be hockey before that, and at least there'll be the World Championships that we can break down and the World Juniors, which is a few weeks away. Are you interested in that at all?
That I can't wait for. I mean, okay, the World Juniors is, you know, it's everything that it's everything about being Canadian. It's just it's in us, you know. If you're in town for the World Juniors, you're watching, and I certainly will be, and with a keen eye on some Montreal prospects that are, you know, sure to be at the tournament. One in Charles Hudon, who's definitely having a great season in the queue, and the other, and obviously Alex Galchenyuk, who was just drafted by the Canadiens, highest draft pick they've had since Carey Price, in fact, higher than Carey Price. And that is going to be an interesting story to follow with Team USA, a Russian kid with Team USA, and he is absolutely destroying it right now in Sarnia in the Ontario Hockey League. He's just putting up big numbers. Recently had a 4-point game, I think, two nights ago, and that's not the first time this season that's happened. In fact, it was, I think, just a week ago that he had another 4-point game. So the kid is playing up to potential, and if the lockout's benefiting anybody, it's these young kids that have the opportunity to play in junior and gain that extra confidence to get to the next level.
Follow him on Twitter at Eric Engels, the proud Camp Baco alumni. Thank you, sir, for your time tonight.
No problem. Take care, bud.
Catch you. You'll be a bright light coming out of the dark. All the doctors blinking hard. You'll be lightning coming out of the storm. It's a message. It's a message. Our thanks to Eric Engels. Follow him on Twitter for all of your television needs. We'll be back with Adam Kovac on The Kaufman Show.
It'll be all right.
Twist my arm, make me talk sports on the radio. This is the Kaufman Show. I'm Dave. Jay's across from me. Eric Thomas is to my left. Pleasure to have you here tonight, sir.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah,
this is the first time we've done this where I've gone extended.
No, it's the first time you're paying attention to us. That's what it is.
But that I've actually been here for the show and got to take part. And
well, I'm pretty sure you were in on the weren't you in on the Uncensored podcast that we did a couple months back?
Yes, that would be the only full show that I've done.
And that was the day he was, he was ignoring us.
That was the
still
day
doing
that,
this,
that
the same thing.
Yeah. His virgin ears became a little less virgin.
Yeah. I kept looking over at him because whenever we got a new guy sitting in with us, I like to see how they react to some of the things that Dave and I say.
Sure.
I'm going to include you on
especially
that,
especially me, right?
Yeah. Especially you, Dave.
Yeah, I'm the controversial
and Eric,
one.
And Eric reacts great. He's a great audience, so.
We're happy to have him.
Yes.
Let's bring in our next guest. His name is Adam Kovac. He is a Montreal journalist. You've seen him. You've seen his stuff in the Gazette many a time, including a really good article this weekend about homelessness, a problem that continues to plague many large cities in this country. And Adam just had his first article published in the Hockey News.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to go, Kovac.
That's right. So let's
that
bring
boy,
him on.
Kovac.
And he's going to tell us all about FML, the FHL. Hello, Adam. How are you?
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Welcome to the program, man.
I know I'm doing well when Jay is saying nice things to me.
You made it, kid.
this is the big time now.
We'll see how long that lasts, Kovac.
Well, you better ace this. A lot riding on this right now. A lot of pressure.
It's great to be on, but you're having me following up Eric Engels and Dave Zirin. Those are big shoes to follow up.
Don't forget about Richard Deitch.
And Richard Deitch. I mean, this has been pressure's on.
So well, we're happy to have you, and I read your article. It's fantastic. And why don't you tell our audience a little bit about some hockey that's actually being played this winter?
It's kind of an interesting story. I actually got into this. I wanted to write this article basically last year. It was a bit of a different focus. I became aware of a league called the Federal Hockey League, which is it's a pro league. The guys get paid. They don't get paid very much. Each team has a $5,000 salary cap per week. So you're not making great money down there. But these are guys who really love the game. A lot of these guys went undrafted. And they just, they kind of bum around. They change teams every year. They might spend some time in the Southern League a little bit. But they just really want to stay in. And I found out who the leading scorer of the league was last year, which is a name that I think most Montreal hockey fans will be familiar with, which is Pierre Dagenais.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, do they only, I guess they count shootouts for goals, right?
Well, the funny thing was he was just like killing it in this league. He was like 70 points ahead of the next guy. Because he was averaging Gretzky numbers, and he was just way too good for it. And I've heard rumors that he owned the team that he was playing for. It was kind of like a publicity stunt. I never really confirmed that. But
I'm sure he was a huge attraction out in Western Pennsylvania, huh?
Only NHLer in the league, so he was something. And I guess he wasn't too much of an attraction because the team folded in the offseason.
Right.
So it came time to pitch this stuff again this time of year, and I'm looking for his team, and I find out they contracted, and I'm like, there goes that story. And then I found out about this team in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. They just moved there from Wayne, New Jersey during the offseason. They won the championship in Wayne last year, but they just couldn't make the finances work, so they decided to move to Pennsylvania. And there was just one problem, which is that there was no arena. And, you know, they have that can-do spirit, so they just decided to play the entire season outdoors.
Well, what really jumped out at me, Adam, about this whole story is, of course, that Williamsport is such a famous sports city in American lore. It's the home of Little League Baseball.
Yeah, well, and they take great pride in that. I mean, the players from the team that I spoke to even said, you know, like, this is a baseball town. We didn't know if it would work as a hockey town. And then they sold out their first game, but they are playing hockey in a baseball stadium.
Right, an outdoor baseball stadium, like we see for the Winter Classic every year. Right,
which it's actually the same company that did Fenway's arena is the one that set theirs up. So I went in thinking that, you know, the arena was going to be some piece of garbage. I actually thought for a second they might be playing on a pond or something. But they actually have this beautiful arena set up in Bowman Field, 4,600-person capacity. The ice is apparently great. They played their first game in T-shirt weather, and the ice held up, which is more than we could say for the Winter Classic 2 years ago.
That's true.
So it's I just thought it was like this great story about how people find a way. We have these millionaire players against these billionaire owners in the NHL in these gorgeous state-of-the-art arenas, and they can't agree to terms. And meanwhile, you have some guy playing for $200 a game outdoors, and he doesn't care. He's just happy to have a place to play.
Okay, so here's my question to you. That stuff plays in the sticks, right? But what about in Capital City?
Well, they have the Capital City Goofball coming out during in between periods.
I want Dancing
Homer.
Wait
a minute. Is there a place? There's a place called Capital City.
It's a swinging town.
What DC comic book is that from?
Jay, get with the Simpsons, man.
What
come on,
superhero. Oh, okay.
Kovac and I were doing just fine there.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't watch the Simpsons. I'm sorry. I knew that. I knew that too. I'm so ashamed.
I know you're into Star Wars, Jay. So I guess
no, I'm not. I'm not into Star Wars at all.
That's
my uncle. Awkward. <Yeah. laughs> I was until I reached the age of reason, and then I stopped. Okay.
What was that? 34.
Yeah. it was about the time that the first movie came out, the episode one. That's about the time where it said, "Okay, I'm going to stop watching this crap now."
Okay, so now that
Capital City.
Now
that
we'll explain that. So all I was trying to say is that stuff like seems to play out in smaller areas.
Yeah.
Adam's making the point that maybe this is the kind of thing that shows you that there's still a passion for hockey outside of the National Hockey League. Adam, do you think that something like this would work in Montreal, in Toronto?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, we're used to a certain level of play. We're attached to...
The Habs and the Leafs, eh? We're a certain level of play. Which
well,
level is that?
There is a level
I mean,
there.
Even when you go to... Yeah, like, at least the passes are on the tape,
that's
you know,
right.
To a certain degree. Even when you do have the, you know, almighty power of Yannick Weber on your defense, it's still a certain level. I mean, he's apparently tearing it up in Switzerland.
I was
going to
say, don't knock the Swiss, man. Don't knock the Swiss.
But the thing that I love about this is I actually asked the best thing that these guys can hope for is a call-up to the ECHL. They're actually four steps removed from the Ottawa Senators, this team. They feed the ECHL team, which feeds the Binghamton Senators, which feeds the Ottawa Senators. None of these guys are ever going to sniff the AHL. And I asked the captain of the team, I'm like, do you hope to one day make it to the ECHL? It's like, nah, man, I know that ship has sailed. I just want to play. I'm just happy to have a place to play.
Huh. Are they getting people out there, though? What? How many people are coming to watch these games?
They sold out their first game.
Wow. And there's 4,600 people capacity.
4,600 people.
That's incredible.
Maybe if they keep it up, they'll consider playing a game at the Little League field, which is probably 10 times that size, right?
Next town over, it's South Williamsport.
Oh, I'm getting my million. You know, it's been so long since I've been there, Adam, that I'm getting my South and North Williamsport mixed up.
Are they anywhere near Capital City? These places.
It's just down the road.
Don't worry, I'll Google Earth it. I'll be on for a long time.
The road from Williamsport to Capital City is a road paved with broken dreams.
Just ask Armin Tanzarian. Adam, a couple of minutes left. Why don't you tell us about the other little feature that you wrote for the Hockey News?
Okay, so this is kind of a fun one. I know there's a lot of fantasy guys out there. I've been suffering this year. The worst day of the year for me was the year my draft got canceled. That was heartbreaking because I think I actually had a shot at not finishing in the basement this year.
Oh, well.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always next year, right?
But you're in an infinity way tie for first place right now. Just looking at it that way. Glass half full, Kovac. Come on.
That is a silver lining right there. I'm going to have to... honestly, I just wanted to finish ahead of my sister's boyfriend. I just wanted to see the look on his face when he didn't beat me this year. That's the only thing I wanted out of this. Anyway.
Isn't that why anybody plays any kind of fantasy league anyway? For the smack talk?
To show up your sister's boyfriend?
To show up your sister's boyfriend.
Okay.
Why don't you just go beat him up? Do what I used to do to my sister's boyfriends. I just beat him up. Whether I lost or not in fantasy stratomatic or whatever, it didn't matter. I just go and beat up my sister's boyfriends. That's how you're supposed to do it, Kovac.
I figure by now the two of you know the only reason I do anything is malice.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's just pure spite.
That's why we waited till 1:30 in the morning to bring you on.
anyway.
Yes, your story. Your other story.
Yeah, a study came out a while back about, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's kind of based on fact about how much fantasy football is costing the U.S. economy in lost productivity. Because you got guys screwing with their lineups when they should be doing actual work.
Right.
You know, not like you hardworking gentlemen.
Exactly.
So I saw this, and I just started wondering, you know, how badly is the Canadian economy affected by fantasy hockey? Because Lord knows that's almost a religion around here. Everybody I know is in some kind of fantasy hockey league. So I called them up, and I said, hey, look, here's the stats on how many people play fantasy hockey. You know, let's assume that it's the same wage that you guys use. And so we did the calculations, and between Canada and the U.S., fantasy hockey probably costs, combined, about $2.9 billion a year in lost productivity.
Damn.
So
that's almost equal to the revenues of the National Hockey League last year.
Almost. And so if anybody wants to blame the recession on anything, I personally blame hockey.
Right. Because people aren't taking up that time to distract themselves on Facebook and Twitter and all the rest of that crap, right? Football teams instead.
Well, I know that I'm making up the lack of... fantasy hockey with just copious amounts of internet pornography, but I figure everybody else has their own way of dealing with it.
Well, again, to each his own, right? And, you know, when given... You know, I'll tell you, Kovac, I don't think Richard Deitch mentioned that tonight.
The internet pornography?
No, I don't. I think he left that one on the sidelines.
I think it flipped his mind, because, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and that guy is just a raging pervert.
Wow. Adam Kovac ending it with a bang.
And
Adam Kovac's last appearance on the conference
at Sports Illustrated just completely blew that one. Thank you, Dave. Man. I really appreciate that.
You know, I had absolutely nothing to do with it, my friend. All we did was give you the floor.
That was all you, Kovac. Well done.
You knew I had a big mouth when you asked me to come on.
Adam Kovac, I want to thank you for your time tonight.
I want to thank you for having me on. It has been...
Should I mention that you're interning at CJAD right now or no?
Actually, today was my last day.
Oh, well, there you go. That explains why you're on with us. We appreciate
it. They might actually start paying me money now.
Well, best of luck with that.
Yeah.
Feel free to show them this demo.
I've heard good things about this radio thing. I think it's going to be the next big medium. It's almost as good as the Telegraph.
Oh, I think we're well on our way, man. And by the way, I've got this thing at home called an 8-track. You totally have to check it out. You should hear how the Sinatra sounds on it. It's just awesome.
Oh, man. You kids and your newfangled toys.
Follow him on Twitter at Adam J. Kovac, K-O-V-A-C, or spot him at a Matathon bars near you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dave. It has been a year-long dream to come on this show. Thank you for making it happen.
Add a butter up the host as you leave. Now maybe you'll get to come back on.
I can only hope and pray.
Thanks, man. And congratulations again on getting published in the hockey news. That's some big stuff.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Dave.
Have a great night.
You too.
There he goes. Adam Kovac.
Well, kids, there it is. Capital City.
I'm being educated right now.
There's a swinging town I know called Capital City. People stop and scream hello in Capital City. It's the kind of place that makes a bum feel like a king, and it makes a king feel like some nutty cuckoo super king.
Look, it's Tony Bennett.
Hey, good to see you.
It's the gents the law to Brown in Capital City. You'll caper like a stupid clown when you chance to see 4th Street MD. Yeah, once you get a whiff of it, you'll never want to roam from Capital City, my home sweet. Yeah, Capital City, that happy tall city. It's Capital City, my home sweet, swinging home.
You're listening to The Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back.
Of this plan, as humble as I can, I'll wait another day before I turn away. But know this much is true, no matter what I do, I'll bend in every way. I don't know what to say. Through the door, but they're expecting more of an interesting man. Sometimes I think I can, but how much can I think? I'll speak until I break with every word I say, offending everywhere.
All right, we're back. It's the Kaufman Show. We're going to open up the phone lines for the next segment, and I think we're then going to call it a night. It's been a good episode, and my brain is starting to shut off.
Very heavy. It was very cerebral today.
Yeah, that's it's what we...
Working the brain a little bit.
Well, again, Jay, that's... I want to do a show that I want to listen to.
Yes.
So I want to talk about things that I want to hear talked about.
Stimulate the mind. Get the endorphins going a little bit.
Our thanks again to all of our great guests from tonight, and especially to Richard Deitch and Dave Zirin for their very kind comments on Twitter. If you missed the interviews, thekaufmanshow.podbean.com, as well as iTunes. It'll be up there in about, a little bit after the show ends. Definitely by the time you wake up tomorrow morning, you can catch what you missed last night on The Kaufman Show. I'm at The Kaufman Show on Twitter. Jay is at J-Pub Radio. Eric Thomas, who's sitting in with us tonight, is at ATL2MTL. Get it? Like Atlanta to Montreal?
Yeah.
Okay. You got it, right?
Get it.
All right. 514-790-1690.
Real cities, Dave. Montreal, Atlanta, not capital city. Real cities.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Thank you very much.
Yeah. Name me a good song about Atlanta.
How much time you got, Dave?
You got Georgia.
No, that's the state. That's
so
Georgia.
What? That's the only thing I can think of.
Okay.
And I wanted to say Georgia.
Is Georgia on your mind?
Is on my mind. Yeah.
I want to go something from Ludacris.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is Welcome to Atlanta.
Okay.
And there's a remix of that, so there's two.
Right, right. Bracket remix.
They decided to make a second one of that, did they?
Yeah.
Just remix the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never was much of a Ludacris fan.
I don't dislike him. I think he's clever. And he started as a radio host, so there's future.
Did he?
There may be a future for us in
Chris
in the rap game.
Chris Lova Lova.
Oh, yeah?
In Atlanta.
Okay, yep. And now when he acts, he's Chris Bridges, I think.
Yeah, well, that's his
and now
given
he changed.
Oh, Lova Lova's not his real last name.
No.
Oh, okay.
He's gotten through more identities than a WWE wrestler. You know, the same guy comes back as a different guy a couple of years later.
Imagine you're listening to The Kaufman Show with Dave Kaufman and Jay Lova Lova.
Jay Lover Lover.
We have to take ourselves seriously.
Jay Lover Lover.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Mike. I'm assuming this is Mike in St. Leonard. Good evening, sir. Mike? Hello, Mike.
Good evening, guys.
How are you?
Mike Lover Lover.
I haven't been called that in 20 years. But
Hey, you were called it 20 years ago. Good on you, man.
The early 90s were an interesting chapter in Mike Lover Lover's life.
The return of the Mac.
Yeah.
Good times.
How are you, man?
Not bad. You?
Good. You had a good week?
Yeah, it was a good week and great show as always, Dave. I mean, I don't know how much more you can raise the bar now. I mean, like you said, the only person you're waiting to call in now is Costas. So
Costas, Gord Downie.
Yeah, Gord Downie. That'd be cool, too.
Yeah, we're working on that one. There's actually, I will give you a little tease, somebody that Jay and I have always wanted to speak to, we're working on, and hopefully will be on the show before Christmas.
Sounds good.
We'll leave it at that.
Well, I'll be listening, you know.
She is one of our favorites.
Oh, good. The NFL, you know, the funny thing about the whole take, I saw some of Dave Zirin's tweets yesterday, and I responded back. I was kind of surprised that he was surprised or taken aback by the way they handled it. I mean, out of everything they are, I think they're the most non-hypocritical league out there. They're not pretending to be anything they're not. And one thing they don't pretend to be is nice people who care. They don't.
I don't know. I think they do to an extent. I think you see ads for... you know, the 60 minutes to get your kids playing in school, or you see the United Way stuff. And, and I mean, frankly, the NFL shop ads do more to humanize those players than just about any other sport. The ads with Steven Jackson and Arian Foster right now are fantastic. But it's this double-sided BS, frankly, Mike, that on one side you can tell that they don't care at all about these players, and on the other hand, they're using them to market their league.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
It's just for the bottom line. I mean, there's gambling at stake. There's TV networks at stake. There's no way in the world they were going to cancel that game.
No.
One guy kills himself.
No, but have the debate. Pretend like you're going to think about maybe canceling it.
Why pretend? Be who you are. It's like Mitt Romney doing the 47%. Finally, we get to see some honesty. That's who he is. Thank God we got it revealed.
And that's the percentage of Americans who voted for him, actually.
Exactly. And so, you know, the NFL continues to reveal itself, and then it's up to us as consumers to decide whether or not we'll still continue to buy into what they're selling.
Yeah, but we're force-fed it.
We're force-fed it. You don't have to watch the games if you don't care about
it. No, you can watch Concordia play McGill if you so choose.
Exactly.
See, but you're laughing, and that's my point. It's a joke. You watch the NFL, and... I mean, we had our 5 minutes on the CFL last week after the Grey Cup.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that's pretty much all the time I choose to spend on that.
It wasn't even on the game we were talking about.
It was on
about,
Bieber.
On the talent.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof. That's the thing about I think the NFL saved a lot of lives this weekend by having the game on. All the bookies, there'd been a lot more murder-suicides, I think, had they not played.
I don't know. If people took Carolina and the Chiefs won the game, then there might be a lot more people out there running from their bookies right,
right
now.
Right, exactly. Murder-suicides.
But also the other thing about the NFL, Dave,
yeah.
is that it's the culture. The mm-hmm. culture of the sport, the culture of the players, the false machismo, and, you know, I mean...
I don't know. It doesn't seem so false... Frankly,
you know, but then are we surprised at this kind? I'm actually kind of surprised this kind of stuff doesn't happen more, to tell you the honest truth, just based on who these guys are, what they put themselves through, the kind of physical.
Well, it does happen more, actually, when they point out all the suicides of these players
that's
that have
true.
Been happening.
Yeah,
it actually does in a very disproportionate kind of way as compared to regular society. I mean, wow.
And the NFL's good at hiding this stuff. I mean, next week, you think anyone's going to be talking about this?
Not if they can help it. Not if they can help it.
Not at the network level.
Well, one of the big networks wasn't talking about it the day after.
Exactly. I mean, it's of no interest to them at all. And, of course, I was kind of surprised they wouldn't mention it. But I don't think they know how to handle it.
That's a big part of it.
So they're probably like, let's just not say anything.
That's a huge part of it, Mike. And I think that's something that a lot of people in this industry are guilty of.
Yeah.
But until you tackle it, how do you know if you're capable or not?
Well, you know, then you get a guy like Costas, Bob Costas, he goes out there and he says something, and Dave Zirin made an excellent point that has nothing to do with gun control, and the fact is, you're a 25 millionaire, you have whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
Which I didn't take into consideration until he mentioned that.
But I'm not a millionaire, and if I wanted the gun right now, I'm pretty sure I could figure out a way to get it.
Exactly. So, you know, there's only so much you can say about that. But outside of him, there's not many people who can really speak up and say anything intelligent about it. And like you said, you were even surprised that some of the guys at Fox had anything reasonable to say at all.
They just, you know what they did at Fox? They showed compassion.
Well,
And it was refreshing to see, especially in contrast with what CBS did.
That's true. And Bradshaw's been through a lot on a personal level as well, too, I believe. I think he had some sort of disability for most of his career. And I don't know if he was dyslexic or he had problems reading.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's gone through a little bit on himself. Even despite his success, he was still having some personal difficulties. So on his end, I'm not surprised that there'd be a little bit more empathy, but... You know, what can you say? It's the NFL. Next week we go back and continues. And I'm sure that all of this will be revealed in time. But, and, you know, for me, it saddens me. The whole situation saddens me. But I, you know, just from afar is a human tragedy, but not because he's an NFL player.
I just wish that people understood, Mike, that there's a certain responsibility that comes with your position.
Yeah.
And you owe it. You owe it to the fans. You owe it to everybody, frankly.
But, you know,
and that's how I feel from the bottom of my heart, that there has to be a moment where, you know, integrity and supersedes advertising.
But Dave, I'm sure you've even seen it with some musicians. You know, you love music like I love music, and you see some guys, they just don't get it. They don't understand that you've gone on a venture down a route where your life, part of your life is bigger than you. And so you owe a little bit more than just to yourself. A little bit of respect for the people who have given you this amazing opportunity to have some sort of self-respect. And these guys don't seem to get it. They're not tutored. They lock into it. I mean, just because you have a great physical ability to do something, all of a sudden you're put on a pedestal, but you're not taught maybe good morals, self-respect, respecting women. I mean, none of those come automatically. And so if no one's going to teach them that, it's not going to happen.
Well, there needs to be more of a safety net and somewhere for these guys to go. And I'm thinking back to our conversation with Ellis Valentine from the summer, not the one from last week, but where he talked about how God gave him a hell of a vehicle, but yeah, didn't give him the manual on how to use it.
That's right.
And there's something to that. And, you know, you heard it with Ellis and talking about how he had nobody to talk to.
Yeah.
I would hope that in today's National Football League, there are people for these guys to talk to.
Yeah.
I hope. I don't know.
I don't know.
I hope. Mike, thanks for the call.
Guys, have a great week.
We'll speak to you soon.
You bet.
I think another part of the problem is that the NFL is a machine. It's a well-oiled, very lucrative machine.
Right.
And they basically got us by the cojones.
Yeah, because and college football, too. Don't kid yourself.
Right. To a lesser extent. But, yeah, I won't even get into college football because that's a sham to call those athletes amateurs as much as the universities are bringing in.
Right.
But as far as NFL football is concerned, what other product is there that's comparable? They put themselves on a pedestal here where they're the only thing on Sundays. They've got the main market for people sitting on their couches doing nothing on Sundays, so they know they've got you. And I see the same thing happening with hockey, because once hockey comes back, people are just going to forget about the lockout, forget about the fact that the fans were overlooked in this whole scenario, and be happy to have hockey back and come flooding back into the arenas when it's time to go.
I have season tickets, Eric, and I debated whether or not to hold on to them. And I mean, I share them with somebody. He wants to keep them. He has pointed out to me the folly of the short-sightedness that I was saying. You know, I was angry. I'm going to get rid of my tickets and screw them. Doesn't work that way. I want those tickets. But I will leave them in the book for that first game. And they will sit empty. And I hope that other people do it too. Section 301, Row B. Someone wants to go move down to my seats, they're more than welcome to.
I said in the next full season of hockey, I'm not going. I won't go to a single game, and I have...
Even if I invite you?
Even if you invite me,
wow.
I'm not going. I am not going.
You're
I have access. I have access to tickets
well,
whenever
then why
I
have
want
you never invited me?
Huh?
I said, then why have you never invited
because
me?
Because I have to take customers.
Sorry.
I have no
Sorry
choice.
Sorry if I'm not a
Otherwise,
customer.
I'm not going to get it. Oh, no, listen, but if they were mine, for sure, we'd be going together.
I'm teasing.
But
you.
I have access and I refuse to go. I'm not going to any more games. And that's it. And I'll say it on the air. I don't care. You know? And you know what? And it's like I said, maybe I'll give my tickets to the guys, to the people who are suffering, the people who work the concessions, people who drive the trucks, the waitresses,
yeah,
the bartenders all around town
none
that
of them
are losing
are gonna,
because of this. Maybe I'll give them the tickets.
None of them are going to want to go, Jay, because when hockey comes back, they're going to want to make some money.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be working.
Yeah. This has been a fun one tonight. Maybe fun isn't the right word, but I'm happy that we were able to talk about what we talked about tonight. I think it's important that the serious issues do get their due. And, you know, we can thank the Habs for not doing a damn thing and allowing us to talk about them. Is this the last track on this? Or is there one more? Click forward one more. Let's see if there's one more ahead of this.
Let's hope so.
No, there isn't. All right, you've got to go onto YouTube, Eric.
Because we cannot.
We can't end the show on any other song. It's called I Love This Town by Joel Plaskett.
We don't want to hurt tradition.
No, we don't. And especially since he retweeted me about 15 minutes ago on Twitter.
So. Did he? Yeah, okay. Well, you know. And we're superstitious.
We are. We're very superstitious.
You know, we're baseball guys. We love baseball. And you change anything up at the end of the game and, you know.
We don't want to mess our mojo up. Jay, do you have any last words for tonight?
Yes, I do. I find it funny that you were saying I was talking about FUNHL, and you're sitting across from me wearing an FUBP
yes, that's right.
shirt, which is funny.
I bought that in New Orleans, where the overriding sentiment amongst the citizenry
it
was
FUBP. Pretty clear where their stance was on that issue.
I will tell you this. I really wanted to talk about the World Baseball Classic tonight.
Yeah.
And I don't think I
will.
I was going
to just mention that.
I even wore the hat so that I would remind myself. I never wear this Team Canada hat.
Yeah. Well.
For good reason.
Yeah, it's not.
Canada opens the World Baseball Classic in March. And we'll touch on this very briefly. Anybody who's listened to the show has heard my sob story of attending Canada's loss to the baseball powerhouse nation of Italy. At the 2009 World Baseball Classic, I was with Max the Guru, and he'll never be the same after sitting beside me at that game. Canada gets the chance to redeem itself in Phoenix, Arizona this March. The tournament starts with Canada versus Italy.
Facing those pesky Italians.
I'm already nervous, man.
At baseball.
Baseballissimo.
The heavyweight that Italians are.
They killed us, man.
In baseball.
They killed us.
That's crazy.
Jason Grilli. Joe Vitiello was on that team.
Awesome.
Mike Piazza was a batting coach. And Alex Liddy, who I think plays for the Rockies now. Italian-born and had a game that... These are names I shouldn't remember, Jay. And it still sticks. Because at the end of the day, sports is a wonderful distraction.
And when a team succeeds, like the 1980 miracle... Team USA, everybody knows all the names on that team.
That's right.
And they had no business remembering them.
Let's hope for happier days and shows ahead, my friend. I want to thank Richard Deitch, Dave Zirin, Eric Engels, Adam Kovac, Mr. Jay Farrar, my co-host, Eric Thomas on the board, and John Kakalakis for helping us out.
Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you face down in our suit, some French restaurant
And I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?